You see? All right. Okay, it's Dia de los Muertos, the sun's coming round, as niños prepare in each pueblo and town. For today, we honor our dearly departed with celebraciones. It's time to get started. At home, we've adorned our altares with care. They're heaped with recuerdos and good things to share. Sweet calaveras, so sugary white, they give toothy smiles but never a fright. A black and white photo of Grandpa Padilla, who's riding on horseback just like Pancho Villa, and toys for remembering small angelitos, a train and a dollhouse, are both favoritos. Then off to the graveyard, we head with ofrendas and colorful blankets to make meriendas. We carry incienso and velas to burn that will guide spirits back for their yearly return. And bursts of calendulas, fragrant and bright, the color of sunset and gold candlelight. A path of pétalos will help lead our guests to pillows and blankets for taking a rest. Above we hang streamers of papel picado that wave in the breeze like rainbow pintado. We giggle at paper-cut banners we like, esqueletos riding a horse cart or bike. We share in the foods that our guests love to eat, fresh fruit and tamales, a holiday treat, and clay pots of grandmother's fresh chicken stew and mugs of atole, a chocolatey brew. But everyone's favorite is sugary bread called pan de muerto, with bones of the dead, that offers our travelers a much-needed snack from the weary viaje that brought them all back. Then after our lunch comes the part we love most, putting on makeup to dress like a ghost. In veils and costumes, hard to find that text. In veils and costumes, we join the parade. Although we wear huesos, no one is afraid. Gilberto has scars and a special corona. Annabelle looks like the real La Llorona. Joaquin's snow white barba sweeps down to the floor, while Luz looks like someone we've all seen before. And just as the marigold clouds end the day, dancers and músicos come out to play. They wear special shells that go clickety-clack to wake up espíritus, calling them back. As candle flames glisten, our smiles are bright. Our ancestros know we are with them tonight. They return to their world without sadness or fear, knowing they'll stay in our hearts till next year.
The ministry of this congregation cannot be done by one person alone. Our chalice circles are an important extension of the ministry here, as they provide opportunities for those in this community to connect to one another and understand themselves better in deep, meaningful ways. And I'd like to now invite those people who were trained most recently as chalice circle facilitators to just come forward and stand. Sherilyn, back there. Christina, Megan, and Nasi, come up for. Don't be shy. And Mary Botts is our coordinator for the chalice circles as well. So I want to thank this group of people, Nasi, Megan, Sherilyn, and Christina, for their commitments to serve in the facilitation of this ministry. And this truly makes you a part, an essential part of a larger ministry here at UUCF. And we welcome your creative energy in support of greater breadth and depth, intimacy and ultimacy in our religious experience. And I now invite the congregation to read the charge that is up here on the slide. We welcome these these facilitators have pledged to make sure that this program thrives and grows, and we know that these people will help nurture and support one another and the groups in their spiritual growth by fostering substantive relationships and meeting the needs of that group to help them deepen their understanding of service, worship, and being an essential part of this community. Affirming the value of everyone in our religious community, reaching out to support one another, we all encourage spiritual growth, that we may extend our life-affirming values into the larger community. Joyfully applauding and appreciating your willingness to serve this ministry of our congregation, our Chalice Circle Coordinator, Mary Botts, and I gratefully now commission you officially UUCF Chalice Circle Facilitators.
You may be seated.
We begin our time of candle lighting and invite our worship associate to light one candle to begin here, because this is the start of Diwali. Our Hindu friends, and certainly people who relate to that culture from this congregation, recognize this day. It continues for 5 days until Thursday, October 31st. This is the Indian Festival of Lights, India's biggest and most important holiday of the year. And it also connects with the larger themes of our service. It's a holiday that acknowledges Kali, the 5 millennia-old creator, preserver, destroyer of the universe. Her breathing is the pulse of the universe, for she at once gives birth to the world and the fierce, emaciated hag whose primordial hunger must feast on animals and humans to replenish the energy that drives the cosmos. So it is a celebration of both life and also the darkness that is under that. That is also a very beautiful thing, the recognition of death. She's often depicted with a necklace of skulls, her hair wild, her tongue red, dancing on cremation grounds, gathering up souls to be seeds for new life. So in this spirit, this morning, where we connect both joy and loss, grief and happiness, we welcome in the lights of Diwali. I now invite you, if you do have a personal joy or sorrow, a brief personal joy or sorrow that you would like to share with the congregation, I invite you to do so now, knowing that in just a few minutes we will also have candle lighting in remembrance of those who have gone before. So if you do have something you would like to verbally share with the congregation, I invite you to come forward at this time.
This Halloween will be our 9th wedding anniversary.
The 28th will be my 18th wedding anniversary.
I'm a little shaken. On the way over, I ran over a cat. We drove back and we tried to find, it was a sort of teenage kitten, where she went, and couldn't find her or him. But I had an overwhelming desire to pray for this cat. So if good vibrations can go out to this little spirit.
Thank you. I love the fire here. It's beautiful, but I'm worried about fires in Northern California, and my sister's one of 50,000 that's had to get out of the forest and away from the flames. I always worry about her when the winds come up. So thank you for your thoughts and prayers.
This might be better for the next candle lighting, but a year ago today, the synagogue in Pittsburgh was shot up and people died. I'm going to be going to a vigil in remembrance of that tonight. And my heart is heavy because we still haven't done anything.
I am Chris, and we had a men's group meeting yesterday, and I just wanted to express my gratitude for the men that were there, the sharing that took place, and how light my heart feels when it's okay to just talk about things. So if any other men would like to join us next time, look out for the next announcement. I forgot what date it is. It's about a month away.
At this darkening time of the year, our thoughts turn to things past, to life retreating, and inevitably to those who are no longer with us, to our hopes and our fears. There's a lot of images available to us at this time of year, spooky ones associated with the season, but also ones of dear companions who once graced our lives. Loved ones whom we miss, persons whose lives made an impact on our lives, of all those who were here, contributing, caring, and are now gone. I invite us to let those memories in, recognizing that that brings with it both joy and sadness, even fear of the unknown. But this is the time of the year that we don't push those feelings away. For in embracing those memories, we attest to the enduring importance of those friends, those family members, those loved ones. May these brave and lovely spirits live again in our tender thoughts and prove that death and distance are powerless to sever the bonds that connect truly loving hearts. That's what we're doing this morning. So, in just a moment, you'll hear the sound of wind chimes. And those chimes are meant to mark the changing to the darker half of the year. And I invite you during that time to silently come forward, light your own candle. There's candles at this station and candles here. And you can honor, you can remember, someone who has gone before. Whoever it is for, we know that candle lighting doesn't fix anything, but it does remind us to remember those deep and important soul and heart connections that sustain us. And this remembering, I believe, is really the most important step to creating change in the world, because we only create that change if we recognize the contributions of those who have come before, right? So I invite you now, as you let in those chimes, wind chimes that signal the change of the year, I invite you to come forward, light a candle for whoever it might be that you are remembering this morning. I invite you now to close your eyes. Find that place of prayer, reflection, and meditation. Within yourself. In the struggles we choose for ourselves, in the ways we move forward in our lives and bring our world forward with us, it is right to remember and light candles for those who gave us strength in this choice of living. It is right to acknowledge the power of hard lives well lived. We share a history with those lives. We belong to the same motion. I invite you now into a moment of silence in acknowledgement of those whose memories we have evoked this morning. In this room, there is a diversity of understanding of what death means and what is or isn't beyond that great mystery. And yet, for all that diversity of belief and understanding that is held within this room, we acknowledge that in one way or another, they are with us still. The lives they lived hold us steady. Their words remind us and call us back to ourselves. Their courage and love evoke ourselves. We, the living, carry them with us. We are their voices, their hands, their heart. We take them with us. And with them choose the deeper path of living. The enduring legacy we leave is the love that shines through our lives, a love that counteracts disappointment, sadness, and fear. May we always be open and present to that love. May it be so.
Thank you. Good morning. When I was about 4 years old, my mom got involved with a religious group that mixed Eastern Indian and Native American beliefs and traditions. It was run by an old white guy who had spent much of his young adult life in India and his later years with a Hopi tribe here in the United States. By the time I was 10 years old, we had all moved to a commune together in rural Arizona, and we stayed there with that group until I started high school. My first few years of comic books were from India, and they were about blue-skinned Indian gods like Rama and Krishna and characters like Arjuna the Archer. I used to run around a nearby lake pretending that I was Arjuna the Archer, and I have to believe that I'm one of a tiny handful of North American boys who can make that claim. It is not coincidence that I got married on Diwali. Where my Catholic relatives had paintings and figurines of saints in their homes, we had Kachina dolls, which I would describe as representing spirit people of the Hopi and other Pueblo Native Americans. And on our walls, we had sand paintings, which were made on the nearby Navajo reservation. Interesting side note, my Spanish-speaking Latina mother was powerfully drawn to Native American culture, and that was a large part of the attraction of us moving to this commune thing that we lived in. A few years ago, my brother and I got DNA testing, and we're 20% Native American through my mother, which I think means she was 40%, but she never knew it. Today, I self-identify as a Unitarian Universalist, but growing up in an impoverished Spanish-speaking Latino family and being involved with that commune for so many years makes me an atypical Unitarian Universalist. The Day of the Dead, or Dia de los Muertos celebration, was heavily featured in the Disney animated film Coco, which is about a little boy who goes to the land of the dead to find his great-great-grandfather. When this church's movie group watched that movie, I told everyone in the discussion afterward, you know, that movie's pretty much my actual view of life and death. And nobody said anything in response to that. And I'm sure some people were thinking, wait, is he serious? And I was, in fact, serious. Sometimes I pray, but I don't believe in God in the traditional Western sense of an all-powerful being with a gender. I pray, for lack of a better word, to my deceased loved ones, and I expect a response in the same way that I would expect someone here would help me if I said I have something heavy to carry out to my car after the service. I also sing to my deceased loved ones, and I've done that since I was a child. No one ever taught me to do that. It's just something that has always felt right. Sometimes when I've sung for church services here, I've been singing to them just as much as I was singing to all of you. Talking to, singing to, communicating with people in spirit is what I want to talk about today. Under the broad umbrella of the label parapsychology, there is a category commonly referred to as mediumship. A psychic medium is someone who passes on messages from people in spirit after they have died. My first ever interaction with a psychic medium was at a party many years ago. There was a woman wearing an expensive-looking gypsy costume. She spoke in a terrible, fake Irish accent. And I presume she noticed the ring on my finger and my then smooth, very youthful face, because she proceeded to tell me all about my wonderful wife and the two beautiful children we were going to have someday. One of each, a boy and a girl, I'm not kidding. For those of you who don't already know, I'm very happily married to a man, and we do not now, and we will never have children, unless we accidentally sign a bunch of adoption paperwork. So, flash forward to earlier this year. An acquaintance introduced me to a friend of hers named Anna, saying, Anna's psychic. Actually, she's a medium. You know what that is, right? Like an arrow hitting a target, my mind went right back to that fake gypsy woman from so many years ago. Irish gypsy. But I like to think of myself as both open-minded and polite, so I said, yes, I know what that is. And Anna the medium, who is now a friend of mine, said, I'm actually getting someone for you. Do you want to know? I said, sure, knock yourself out. She said, it's a woman. I can't tell if this is mother or grandmother, but this woman loves you. And I want to say Lily or Lillian. Do you know who that could be? I said, wow, my grandma's name was Lillian. We were extremely close, and that's not at all a common name. Good for you. She said, well, I know it is a really common name, but was John your grandfather? I said, yes, he was. She said, they're both deceased. I said, yes. And then she went like this and she said, did they divorce? I laughed and I said, no, they would never divorce. And she said, well, I'll just tell you, I'm getting them both really clearly as your grandparents, and I'm also clearly getting them as not together. I said, that's because Lillian was my dad's mom and John was my mom's dad. So they were both my grandparents, but they were never a couple. She said, oh, I shouldn't have assumed divorce. I'm not exaggerating in any way how I met my friend Anna this year. That's exactly what she said. In becoming friends with Anna this year, I have met other people who are trying to develop their mediumship skills. So I've offered myself up as a guinea pig because I consider myself open-minded, but I'll also tell you, frankly but politely, if what you're saying to me doesn't make any sense. Case in point, one of these mediums in training that I let practice on me said, I have a woman with me. This is not mom, but it's mom's generation. So I want to say like an aunt. This is a traditional stay-at-home mom. She had four kids, and I'm getting those four kids as three and one, so like three girls and a boy, or three close in age and one not. And she took care of you sometimes when you were a little boy. This is a very loving person. I want to say aunt, or like an aunt. I said, I'm sorry, but that just does not describe anyone that I know now or that I have ever known. She paused and she said, well, would it help if I said that the month of May is somehow strongly connected to all of this? Oh, or maybe it's the name May. And I said, oh my God, May was a neighbor we had when I was 8 years old. She did have three girls and one boy. She was a traditional stay-at-home mom. She did sometimes babysit me when I was little. And she was a very loving, wonderful person. I haven't thought about her in a really long time. I guess I kind of forgot. Okay. I know that most of what I've said so far is a lot for some of you to swallow. And I want you to know that it all puts me in a very awkward position. I have worked for one of the world's top science institutions for more than a decade. And we work really closely with NASA, where we all deal in facts. I got to see the Mars rover before it was sent up. It was like 30 feet away behind a wall of glass, but you know, now it's on another planet. It was one of the coolest and geekiest moments of my life. I also had to put myself through school, and I have a master's degree. And from my costly, time-consuming, formal education, I know for a fact that memories, brain scans can show us where memories are stored in the brain. So just how exactly could people in spirit be demonstrating anything like memories, much less personalities, without the benefit of a physical brain? My costly, time-consuming, formal education is directly at odds with my repeated personal experiences. What's gotten under my skin this year is thinking about the mechanics of what it is these mediums are doing. How on earth is it possible to communicate from one personality to another without a physical brain? That does not make sense. Also, it's happening. So what do I do with that? The idea that I'm currently sitting with, and this does not originate with me, is that consciousness might be received by our bodies rather than physically housed inside of our bodies. I was first introduced to that idea several years ago, and I just thought it was ridiculous at that time. The assumption that I've taken for fact for most of my life is that consciousness is housed inside our bodies and specifically inside the brain. If you damage a limb badly enough or outright lose a limb, you're still you. But if you damage badly enough or outright lose your head, that's it. It's all over, right? Maybe not. There's also the question of memories. Brain scans can show us where and when memories form in the brain, because new synapses physically grow inside the brain in response to new stimuli. But what if, instead of being housed in those locations, memories are instead processed in those locations as they are received from elsewhere? I am now giving serious consideration to the idea that our personalities and even our memories might be received and processed by our brains, similar to how input from our bodies is received and processed by the brains. The part of your brain that processes vision, for example, is at the back of your head. And if you sustain an injury to the back of the head that's bad enough, you can go blind, even though there's nothing at all wrong with your eyes, because that processing center gets damaged. So maybe physical brain damage from either injury or disease, like Alzheimer's, impedes the processing of memories received from elsewhere, rather than impeding the storage and retrieval of memories from those damaged brain locations. I don't know. As an adult, I believe in the continuation of consciousness after death because of numerous personal experiences that have happened over my entire lifetime. Some of the most significant of those happened around my mom's passing. In the last few weeks of her life, my mother regularly saw her own deceased parents and some aunts and uncles who passed before her. Her Catholic relatives dismissed all of that as hallucinations, but she only ever hallucinated deceased loved ones. She never saw strangers. She never saw things like talking plants or pink elephants or anything like that. And if you've ever been on medication or recreational drugs that cause hallucinations, you know that you don't get to choose what you hallucinate. That's not how that works. Also, I think it's really important to mention that these were not comforting experiences for my mom. All of these deceased loved ones were trying to get her to go with them, and she was not ready for that. They were annoying her and making her angry. When I was a little boy, an old couple named Lee and Louise used to babysit me sometimes. And they were so loving and wonderful that I miss them even today. So as my mom was dying a few years ago, I was driving home one day from the nursing home and I got stuck in traffic. And I'm sitting in my car, and instead of singing to Lee and Louise, I'm talking to them out loud, pleading with them to help my mom transition out of this life. This is my form of prayer, and remember that I expect a response when I do this kind of thing with my deceased loved ones. So the next day, I go back to the nursing home, and we're all sitting there talking, and my brother asks my mom if she's seen any more of her parents. And she says, no, but guess who came to see me last night? Lee and Louise, do you even remember them? I have not thought about them in years. We hadn't been discussing Lee and Louise. She just coincidentally came up with that the day after I had been praying to them. Well, my husband is completely supportive of me, exploring this issue of mediumship in my own way and in my own time. This year has been kind of challenging and lonely for me. Most people are very polarized around this subject. Almost all the responses to it that I've witnessed or personally experienced are extreme responses. It's either not real at all, and I mean disdainfully not real, or it's real but it's evil, or it's this extreme positive response where people see a certain colored car on the freeway and they think that's a dead loved one trying to send them a message. Most people seem to desperately need this idea of mediumship to be not at all real or absolute factual truth. Personally, I'm just not willing to rationalize away that this happens, though I am still baffled by how it is happening. I will say that those who need for it to be true usually seem to be wounded to some degree by the loss of a loved one. And those who need for it not to be true also seem to be coming from a wounded place. A kind of epiphany for me this year has been about atheists. It turns out that for many atheists, they don't believe in an afterlife of any kind, and by extension, that includes not believing in God. I did not know that. I thought that atheists were only taking God out of the afterlife equation. But again, my upbringing was very different from most North Americans. I'll tell you that I have always believed in an afterlife, but I don't know that I've ever believed in God. Those two things have never gone hand in hand for me. I've done some historic research on this topic, and mediumship is widely accepted in the United Kingdom. Spiritualist churches regularly hold mediumship demonstrations, and there are hundreds of spiritualist churches across the UK. They have laws there governing the fees people charge for mediumship and how to get refunds. I'm not kidding. I was surprised. According to the Dictionary of Unitarian and Universalist Biography, I didn't know that existed until researching this, just before the American Civil War, spiritualists were roughly 10% of the US population, and universalists were more likely to convert to spiritualism than Unitarians were. There was a lot of heated debate about this topic in our early communities. Both universalism and Unitarianism reached an accommodation with spiritualism in the late 1800s. The terms of that accommodation were basically, believe in this if you must, but don't preach about it. Today in the United States, it's a widely disdained subject, but the roots of that disdain are neither religious or scientific. In the early 1900s, most mediums were women, and what they were trying to do was to demonstrate the continuation of consciousness after death. What they indisputably did was to demonstrate that women could make a living without becoming teachers or wives. That got other women thinking about what might be possible in all kinds of ways. And religious centers and community centers that were open to hosting mediumship demonstrations also tended to be open to hosting suffragettes. The idea of truly independent women rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. Those feelings of contempt for the mere idea of autonomous women were so closely linked with mediumship in those early days that the stain of derision and mockery persists even to this day. I am uncomfortable broaching the subject of mediumship in conversations, and I'm a pretty strong-willed person who I don't think would ever be described as conflict avoidant. But I have caught myself avoiding this subject in conversations in exactly the same way that I used to avoid subjects that might cause people to even suspect that I'm gay. I have been a closet believer in mediumship. Being out as gay for most of my life and now being married to a wonderful man And coming to all that part of myself so much later in life than I think I needed to, being in the closet in any form is super uncomfortable for me. So consider me out again. I believe in mediumship. And I'm very much aware of the ease with which it can all be faked and how people can convince themselves that something is happening when it really isn't. It is easy to take advantage of vulnerable people. I do get that. I think the reason many of us, so many of us, are polarized on this topic is because we're talking about both death and also an afterlife of some kind, and it is the rare individual who does not carry some baggage on either or both of those topics. I want to finish today by telling you something, by promising you something, and by requesting something. What I can tell you from my own history and my experiences as a minister's spouse is that I have sat through a lot of funerals and memorials. Regardless of religious beliefs or lack of them, regardless of all demographics, a significant number of people who know that they are at the end of their lives, they make references to going home. I'm sorry, I can't stay here with you anymore, I have to go home. You know that if I fly away home tonight that I still love you. I'm done here, I'm going home. Well, I get to go home now, so that's good, right? That word home comes up over and over again with the dying. What's so fascinating about that to me is that for me, home is wherever Jason lives, wherever my husband lives. When I hear the word home, I don't think of our house, I think of him. For many of us, that word home sparks images in our minds of people rather than of buildings. What I can promise you is that if I know you, and especially if I care about you, I will sing to you after you pass. One of these mediums who were practicing, that I allowed to practice on me, she connected with a friend of mine, and she said, she said, you know, people talk out loud to their deceased loved ones all the time, like out loud when there's no one else around, but do you sing to this guy, like out loud sing to him, because he's acknowledging that? I said, yes, I do that all the time. She said, well, that is a new one on me. Like, I was the strange one in that conversation. My request, as you close this today, as I close this today, is that if you outlive me, that you sing to me after I've passed, or play music for me of some kind, even if that's just turning up the radio and thinking about me during a song that you like. I don't know why this is so important, but it's something that I can feel in my gut that it matters, and it's something that I have done instinctively since I was a child. That the children's story that I read this morning and the Disney film Coco both represented Dia de los Muertos as being a small window of time each year when the dearly departed are with us. And those are accurate depictions of Dia de los Muertos, but I believe that people in spirit are always available to us. Like the day I was stuck in traffic and pleading with Lee and Louise to help my mom. As we sing the closing hymn today, I invite you to just consider the possibility that maybe consciousness continues after the death of a body. Maybe. Maybe it's possible to communicate with people after they have passed. Maybe. Maybe singing to someone because their life is over is not that different as singing to someone because a church service is over. Maybe it's not so much an end as it is a transition. Maybe. Thank you.
Thank you, Lawrence. That was excellent. Our offering is a vital way we show our gratitude for this community. By giving to UUCF, we know that this community of caring will continue to do its good work in the world. We thank you for your generosity. Thank you.
All right, let's get to some singing. We are going to be singing hymn number 1024, When the Spirit Says Do. So please rise in mind, body, or spirit and join us in singing to our spirit family members and friends.